Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everybody. Get my little Mad Dog impersonation there. No, this isn't Mike and the Mad Dog. This is the Steve Jones Show. I'm Chris Elio. I'm filling in for Steve for the first 2 or 3 minutes here while he comes into the Sunbury Motors studio. I'm also filling in for the great Sean Carey, who is still on vacation. Still got a few more days of that, so hopefully he's enjoying that, I hope. Phone number down here if you want to get involved with the show is 1-800-795-9565. And as I had said, Steve's on his way into the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, Route 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. Amongst the other ways you can reach us, we're on Facebook, The Steve Jones Show on Facebook. You can go to the website, stevejonesshow.com, where you can download the podcast of the show. You can email Steve at stevejones@wkok.com, or you can reach out to him on Twitter at Steve Jones PSU. That's at Steve Jones PSU. And speaking of PSU, Penn State, if you are a Penn State fan, today is a great day for you to be tuning in. We'll have the head coach James Franklin on. And listen, I am not a Penn State fan. I don't even have a dedicated fandom personally when it comes to college football. I kind of go regional. I lived in California for 10 years. I showed up there right as Stanford was becoming good, right in Northern California. So I followed that, and I really got into that team for a few years. And it seems that success follows me, because when I went there, the Giants were just starting to become good, and Tim Lincecum was you know, still fresh, and that's when they started winning World Series, and they were 2 years away from, Golden State was 2 years away from drafting Steph Curry. And now I come here, and last year, I got to be honest, I'm not a Penn State fan. As a matter of fact, I was kind of mad at Penn State like the rest of the world because of all the controversy that happened. And last year's team utterly captivated me, completely captivated me. Not during the regular season, of course, but when they beat Ohio State, I stood at attention. I went, whoa, something's happening here. And then they tore up the rest of the season. And then that Wisconsin, the last two games of the Penn State season last year, the 2016 Big Ten Championship game and the 2017 Rose Bowl game, two of the best postseason college football games I've seen in a while. It's been a while since I've seen games with so much on the line that delivered on the promise of what was on the line and really made you feel like they were fighting for it. So Penn State, really captivating team this year. I think they're very interesting. I kind of disagree with Steve and what he was saying yesterday about how, you know, when they get to this level and you know, they'll be ready and the pressure won't get to them or whatnot. I think it's interesting to see how they respond to coming off such a dramatic loss in the Rose Bowl game.
So that means nothing. That means nothing.
See,
I'm serious. It means nothing. It doesn't mean a thing.
Okay.
You know what? I mean, there is a big difference. I remember the 1979 Sugar Bowl. And that 1979 Sugar Bowl affected players and it affected Joe. Okay?
Right.
Is the suit in the background?
No.
Oh, okay. Got the shakes for a second there. So, and that affected everybody. And Joe admitted it. I mean, Joe flat out admitted it. When I did the show, I don't know, how many years ago was it? 5 years ago? Joe Paterno, in his own words, I had him talking about it. All right.
So what makes you think okay. This is any different?
because in 1985, I watched another team come off a loss like that and get totally motivated by it.
So you're saying that this team looks more like the 85 team as opposed to the prior?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, that makes sense. You have more experience than I do. I'll give you that. But
I have more experience than everybody. the whole planet. Doesn't mean it's all good experience. But
Steve Jones is the Gandalf of college football.
That's all we need. but there are two types of experiences. And again, the 78 team would dovetail from the 77 team, which went 11-1. Well, 78 was really their shot, and then 79, they just got really affected by the whole thing. I mean, Joe thought about quitting. I mean, he really did. He was like, right? But then you look at the 81 team became the 82 team. The 85 team became the 86 team. How they finished in 93 set up 94. Right? So, I mean, I've watched all this play out, and most of them have been, with the exception of 78, the downer, the letdown. The other ones have been motivated by it. And this team's motivated by it.
All right.
Well, yeah, this team is having zero issues with it. Now, I'll tell you what we do have an issue with, is I did get James Franklin today.
Nice.
I did. And guess what?
What?
We had a technical problem.
Oh, no.
Right? And I apologize to the audience, so it's very much so. I got 11 minutes with him today and had a technical problem with it. Mm-hmm. And I apologize. I don't know if there's any way to recover it. If there is, we will find a way, but we had an issue. So my apologies to the audience because we promoted it. I had it, felt good about it, and we're set to go with it. And every once in a while, these things happen.
Oh, yeah. Believe me.
And I apologize to the audience that this happened. So... And that's not fair to them, considering that we promoted it and people were looking forward to it, I'm sure. Is there anything groundbreaking and earth-shaking in the interview? Not really. If we can recover it, we'll recover it. We're attempting to do that right now, but it appears to be a losing proposition. So every once in a while, you'll get... Do we have Adobe at the station?
Yep.
Yeah. Every once in a while, it freezes.
Oh, God, yes.
And guess what? On this interview, it was saving the interview, and it froze.
Oh, man.
It was saving the interview, and it froze. And that's what happened to it.
I've lost hours of work because of Adobe Audition.
And that was
when it was new.
Right. So that's what happened to it. Went to save it. It got, I don't know, a third to a halfway in terms of the save of the file. Okay. And all of a sudden, the little circle showed up. Mm. And when the little circle showed up, that was pretty much it. Think, okay. So... That's what happened. Now, is there a way to recover it? Yes, there is a way. There is a long shot way to cover it. So.
Well, here's the hoping, you know.
Right. So. My apologies to the audience. I feel awful about it. It is under the category of it's under the category of not one person did a single thing wrong.
No, it's ghost in the machine type stuff. It's just what happens.
But technology got us good on this one. So we just I don't know. There's no way to believe me, we've been trying. It's been a heck of an effort.
Well, I'm sure. I have no doubt.
Yeah. Oh, look, I'm supposed to do a Quicken Loans commercial. How about that?
All right.
Yeah, let's see. What do I have to say here? let's see. Let's see what we have to say here. Let's I get this note says, apparently play-by-play guys across the country are doing this. Since 1907, the Nittany Lion has been called the fiercest beast of all. Today, with his confidence at doing one-handed push-ups, he may be the fittest. If you'd like to be this confident when it comes to your mortgage.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wait. I've got to do two of them. Hold on a second here. What?
You got to do them today during this show?
No, I got to do them. I got to do them at some point.
Oh.
We are Penn State. It's the most confident declaration of all of college football. And it lets rivals know that they're in for a fight when they enter Beaver Stadium. If you'd like that kind of confidence when you go after your mortgage.
Yes, I want to go in there with the confidence of a lion. I want to bite the head right off of the real estate agent.
I mean, you'd love some of the requests I get. Like, really?
Well, you know, when your name is Steve Jones, that's what happens.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. There's nothing like being that guy. Right? I got introduced the other night in Erie. They're going through like whatever. The guy was really nice. The guy's name's Luke, and the people at Erie were super. And this guy is really nice. And he's going through essentially my resume. And I got up. I said, "Geez, I wish I was that guy."
Who's that guy you announced? He sounds awesome.
Good. My goodness. So. I apologize for that. Now, I know we do have a writer from MLB coming on.
Yeah,
right?
We got Paul Hagen coming up at 3:35.
Right. And Mr. Ham's at practice today, so I'm looking forward to that. I've got to text him back here. Yeah. Hey, Steve, how's the suit? No, he didn't say that.
The suit fits fine. No, you mean the person? Oh.
Everybody knows who the suit is.
Yes. Well, you know. Took me a little bit. I'm still new here.
Oh. You don't know the suit.
I mean, I don't know the stories behind the suit. I just know that there is one. I just don't know what it is.
The stories behind the suit?
Yeah. Why the legend is what it is.
Jeez, Chris. I don't know if we have this much time. I mean, all you have to know is this. All right? If you want to really know about the suit took off last season from doing Shikellamy football. You know, and for the right reason. I mean, he wanted to watch his son play at Danville. Okay. So after driving those fans nuts all season, Mike Ferlazzo filled in. Mike goes to do the first game. No power cords. Suit forgot to put it in the bag. Ugh. We, of course, attribute it to sabotage. Right? In other words, nobody's going to succeed at this job except me. Well, he finally gets the job back this year, right? First game is August 25th. Guess who puts in for a vacation day August 25th?
Yeah, you said.
Okay. All you need to know, wrapped up in one little venture, and that's just the tip of the Titanic iceberg. All right. So, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Paul Hagen's going to join us next half hour. He wrote a great article about Darren Dalton. And we'll just get his feel as to what the Phillies are doing and also in Major League Baseball. So we got a lot going on the show today. It's great to have you with us.
And let's see what the Indians and the Rockies are playing. Last I saw, the Indians were winning 2-1. The Pirates, with a win tonight, by the way, would get back to 500. So, yes, the Pirates have been on a roll, taking on baseball's baseball's best, but you have to beat them anyway. So,
I mean, it's unfortunate that the NL West is so dominant this year that the wild card's way out of reach. I mean, they're 8 games back as of right now.
Yeah.
I mean, they're only. I mean, there's like 6.5 out of first place because Chicago's been so bad all year.
Right. I mean, well, that's what you're, you know. Well, I mean, the Cubs lost last night. So, what, the Pirates are, what, 3.5 back in the division? And I laughed the other night because I'm watching the Pirates game. You know, I picked up maybe 5 minutes of it. And they were doing news and notes. And I know I mentioned this on the show yesterday, but I'll mention it again because I didn't mention it in this half hour. And that was they were doing news and notes. And the second one was Stephen Biscotti being sent down to Memphis. And it was mentioned as a factual point that it is the third opening day starter sent to the minors this season. And Bob Walk says, well, that shows you're not going well when that happens. And essentially, you know, I'm paraphrasing. Right, and I'm thinking to myself, hey, yo, wait a minute. They're ahead of you. What kind of year are you having?
They're definitely better than the Tigers, that's for sure.
Oh, my goodness. So, yeah. So there you go.
A lot of the races look. I mean, that National League Central is up for grabs for sure. If the Pirates can get red hot, I mean, who knows with the Cubs? They've been so up and down all year.
Yeah, I mean, that's where the races are. Now the Eagles play tomorrow night in the NFL. So I mean, the NFL preseason's going.
Yep.
All right, and the Eagles will play the Packers. The Steelers on Friday will play the Giants. No starters will be playing anywhere NFL. So.
And the only place that's interesting is a place like my team, the Jets, where, you know, the starters might be playing because you never know who they're going to be. So it doesn't matter. So unless you're a terrible team, this is an awful time to watch football for your team.
Oh, I mean, some people are so into it, and I understand that. If you're really into it, you'll watch some preseason games, and you'll watch to see who's going to get roster spots 39 through 45. I understand that because you're really into your team and you know at some point you'll need whomever's at 39 to 45 in some realm. But if you really want to, you know, the casual fan to be interested, they're not going to be all that interested in watching the battle for rosters 39 to 45.
No.
And they're going to see a lot of guys are going to get cut. And there's no first cut. There's only one cut this year. So, I mean, that's part of it. You're just, oh, well. It's not very interesting.
Now, unless your team's on Hard Knocks, like the Buccaneers will be interesting. Right. That'd be a fun show to watch.
Right, right. I mean, I'll tell you what's interesting. You were talking about Penn State earlier. I'll tell you the big difference with this football team now. You'd watch the first team and maybe some of the second team. They'd be really, really competitive. But now I'm watching the third and fourth teams being really competitive out there. When the third and fourth teams are really competitive, you got some depth and you have some athletes.
Yep.
That's what I'm seeing. So, I mean, that part I find to be really intriguing.
That's why I think Penn State's such a great story, because they've come back from, like, the depths of the furthest you can go as a program almost, other than, you know, an out-and-out expulsion from the NCAA. You know, they had major controversy, and they've come back from it, and that's pretty awesome.
Well, you know what? Bill hung in there with this program and recruited a couple of really good guys, Nelson and Mann and Gesicki are some guys that he recruited. But I'll tell you right now, James Franklin has come in and has taken the recruiting to a different level. And you saw last year the in-game adjustments that they made. And the in-game adjustments they made at the staff were brilliant. That's why they put together so many great second halves last year on both sides of the ball. People forget, defensively, you have to really hunker down as a defense to allow a team to come back and win. And they did, because Brent Pry made some great adjustments last year. Paul Hagan next half hour, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, in beautiful downtown Hummel's Wharf. Spider Caldwell on the show tomorrow. Very pleased to be joined by Paul Hagan from MLB.com. Paul, welcome back. It's great to hear you again.
Great to be with you.
You wrote a very thoughtful article, column about Darren Dalton. What were some of the elements about him that made him a special member of the Philadelphia Phillies?
Well, I think it's a combination of things, really. You know, I think the one thing was his toughness. He had, I think, 8 or 9 knee surgeries, but, you know, he went through a lot, and I think to get ready to play, all the things he had to do to get ready to play every day as a catcher, I think that really earned him a lot of respect from his teammates, which sort of leads into the second part of it, which is his leadership. I mean, we've heard a lot about that since Darren passed away, but it really was amazing how he was able to, you know, kind of be the sheriff in that clubhouse. Jim Fregosi, who was the manager at the time, I think always understood that if a player heard it coming from one of his teammates, it meant a lot more than coming from the manager or a coach. And so he sort of deputized Darren to be that guy for him, and Darren really took to it. I think he was reluctant or dubious a little bit at first, but he took to it and became just a tremendous leader. To the extent that at the end of his career, when he was traded to the Marlins, Jim Leland to this day will tell you the Marlins don't win the World Championship in 2007 or 2003, whatever year it was, without Darren. That he was the guy that, you know, the Marlins had signed a bunch of free agents, and he came in and kind of brought them all together at the end of the season, and they don't win without him. And then I think the third part that really wasn't commented on as much is that he was a real kind human being. He had a big heart. He tried to help. He was very big into causes like homelessness. He tried to do all he could to fight homelessness. He was generous. And he was just a real human being. You know, he was a pretty big deal in this town, but he wasn't the kind of guy that was going to big league anybody, fans, media, anybody around. He was a human being, and he would talk to you. And I think all those things made him a really unique and special person.
What was the process sometimes it would take for him just to play in a game because of his knees?
Yeah, I know. I don't know exactly because we weren't allowed in the training room, obviously, but I know he got to the ballpark really early, 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and went into the training room and got treatment and got his legs wrapped and then went through a lot of treatment after the games, too, which I think kind of led to one of the famous things about the 93 Phillies, which was that a lot of them sat in the trainer's room after the game and drank beer and talked baseball, and that's how they bonded, and that's one of the reasons, you know, that they probably were as good as they were, got as much out of their talent as they did, because they did talk about the game. And I think one of the ways that probably started was that Darren had to be in there anyway, you know, getting treatment on his knees, and he was just had such a magnetic person that, you know, guys would come in and they'd have beers and they'd sit around and they'd talk, and it really developed into something special for that team.
Is it possible for today's group of players to even do that or think about that?
I guess it's possible, but it just doesn't seem to happen. I'm not really sure why. you know, it seems to me that these days the players, the game ends, and they're in a hurry to get out and do whatever they're going to do after the game. And I know, you know, you have families and you have friends and you have a life, and you want to get out. And you know, from a family point of view, I'm not sure that what those Phillies did was the best thing. I'm sure it put a lot of strain on their wives and their families to have them, you know, spending 2, 3, 4 hours or more after a game in the clubhouse. But from a baseball point of view, it was spectacular, and it obviously helped make that team what it was.
Well, I have to ask you about the Joe West thing. He ends up being suspended because he made some comments about Adrian Beltre, and Adrian Beltre doesn't think he should be suspended. What was your thought when you read that story that Joe West was suspended?
Well, you know, it's funny. I just did a big story for MLB.com on Joe West that ran right before he became just the third umpire in history to umpire 5,000 games. And, you know, one thing anybody knows about Joe is that he's outspoken, and he takes charge, and he's going to say what's on his mind. And, you know, I think Major League Baseball has to do what they have to do, and I'm sure Joe will accept it. But this is just what Joe is, Joe West is. And I like him a lot, and I think he's a great character of the game. I think he's a credit to the game, and you know, Major League Baseball, if they felt the need to suspend him, I'm sure he's going to accept it and move on.
Well, interesting that it happened. There are a lot of people that don't agree with it, but that's fine. That's another day, another time. What about? I want to ask you about this current club. I mean, back in, I want to say May, I think I said to John Kruk, what signs are you looking for that, you know, will show they're making some progress in a direction? He said, win a game, all right? you know, and that's John Kruk. All right, so I'm going to ask you, what progress do you think we've seen from the Phillies in the past month, and what signs are you looking for here down the stretch?
Well, I think, you know, we saw that little five-game winning streak where the starting pitching was really good. I never thought that this year was necessarily going to be measured by wins and losses. I thought it was going to be measured by, you know, how guys progressed. And frankly, there have been some disappointments. I think Michael Franco is one. I think a lot of people thought, well, this might be the year that he kind of gets over the hump and becomes a little more disciplined at the plate and becomes a more consistent producer. And that hasn't happened to this point. So I think it does bring up the question, fairly or unfairly, you know, is he the answer? I think the Phillies have thought for a few years that they didn't really have to worry about third base, you know, that Michael Franco was going to be the guy there. And I think now they have to at least consider the possibility that he might not be. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to quit on him at the end of the year. I suspect, you know, that unless something unexpected comes along, that he will get another chance next year to show that he's the guy. But he's getting to that point in his career where he's got to show it, even though he's still relatively young. I think, you know, there was a lot of concern about Odubel Herrera earlier this year. He got off to a slow start after getting the five-year contract. You know, the only guy on this team who was signed beyond this year. But Odubel has sort of turned it around lately. Now I guess the answer or the question is, you know, to try to find out why did he get off to that slow start, and is there anything they can do to, you know, keep him on track to, you know, to be the kind of player that he shows that he has the potential to be when he is on his game. I think we still need to see more from the young starting pitchers. They seem to have a lot of guys who dominate at AAA, but haven't quite gotten to the point where they can replicate that or bring that into the big leagues. I think that's natural for young pitchers. It's certainly not unheard of, and some of the best pitchers in baseball struggled early in their career when they first came to the majors. So I don't know that it's necessarily a concern, but you want to see them get to the point where they can you know, compete and give the team a chance to win. Most of the time, they go out there. And then we got to figure out the bullpen. Hector Neris is not necessarily throwing the ball the way he did last year. It could be because he pitched so much last year. It could be because the hitters have made an adjustment. I kind of get the sense from watching the games that he's not making as many quality pitches as he did last year, and he needs to get back to being a little more consistent. But I think that's something, you know, that you want to see. If Hector Neris is the closer of the future, you want to see him get to the point where, you know, it seems like these days, most of the time, even when he gets a save, he gets in a jam, then he's got to get out of it, which some closers do, but in a perfect world, you'd like to see him have a few more clean ninth innings.
I always get concerned about people getting a save when they're saving the game from themselves. That always bothers me. What about looking at a kid like Rhys Hoskins and guys like that down the stretch?
Well, you know, it's an interesting situation the Phillies have there. I think by any measure, Rhys Hoskins has earned the right to show what he can do in the big leagues. But on the other hand, you know, Tommy Joseph is not old, and after a slow start, he's been pretty productive. So, you know, you really don't, I don't really know how you resolve that, other than, apparently, from what we're hearing, Rhys Hoskins has been playing left field the last couple days in Lehigh Valley. I think it would be interesting. I have not heard how he's done out there. That would certainly be an interesting thing to have him come up and play left field. It's probably a little unfair to him, you know, to worry about coming up and trying to hit, continue to hit the way he's been hitting, and also play a position that he's not very familiar with. And we also heard earlier in the spring from some Phillies people that he couldn't play any other position but first base. So I think that's an intriguing situation, and it's going to be fun to watch. But certainly his bat has earned him a right to show what he can do in the big leagues. And I think a similar situation exists at second base. You know, you hear a lot of people say, well, bring up Scott Kingery, trade Cesar Hernandez. Well, Cesar Hernandez, other than when he was on the disabled list, is having another pretty good year. He really did well in the second half of last year after he's moved to the leadoff spot, and I think he's having another really good year. As much as I like Scott Kingery, just as everybody does, I'm not in a big hurry to get rid of Cesar Hernandez either.
No, and I can understand that completely. I want to ask you about pace of play. My brother is like me. We're both always been huge baseball fans, and he said to me last week, he says, "What's wrong with this game?" He says, "It's just like parts of it are dragging." He said, "I don't remember this one when we were growing up," right? And he loves the game. So where are we on that? And I don't want the game going 1,000 miles an hour, but there's a difference between how fast a game is and pace of play, balls in play, things like that.
Yeah, I think it's two things. I do think that there are things that can be done to pick it up. if there's a 2.5 minute break between innings, you know, there's no reason why the hitter can't be ready to hit and the pitcher can't be ready to pitch when the commercial break ends. So I think there are things like that they can do. I don't want to do too much. I know hitters have, you know, hitters have a right to prepare themselves to hit, and pitchers have a right to prepare themselves to pitch. But I don't think that the hitter has to step out after every pitch. I don't think a hitter has to linger in the on-deck circle until his walk-up song starts and then take a slow walk-up, you know, to make sure everybody can hear his walk-up song. So I think there are things that can be done to tighten the game up that way. But you're right. You don't want to change the essence of the game. If a pitcher needs to hear from the catcher, I don't want the catcher not to be able to go out and talk to the pitcher and have the pitcher make whatever pitch he wants to make, or you know, feel like he's being hurried. But at the same time, I don't want to see the catcher going out there every second pitch. So there is a balance. the other part of this equation, though, is I think it's not really a secret that there's walks and then strikeouts are way up all across baseball and have been for several years, and home runs are back up again. So there is a lot of time, a lot of at-bats where the ball is either not put in play or put into play and it goes over the fence. So there's, I mean, it's everybody loves home runs and it's dramatic, but a single up the middle has a lot more drama to it, too, in the sense, well, can the runner stretch it into a double? Is the fielder going to bobble the ball? If there's a runner coming to the plate, you know, there's a play at the plate that totally goes out the window when a guy hits a home run. So I do think the game has become a little more static in that sense, and I'm not really sure what you can do about that. I've always said I would love to see a team, you know, probably a team that hasn't won for a while, and maybe even a team with a low payroll, try to go back and play the game the way it used to be played. Move the runners, put guys on base, hit and runs, things like that, and just see what happened. I suspect that you might be able to win that way, and I know, you know, I used to be able to point to the World Baseball Classic and say, well, you know, Korea and Japan, teams have played sort of the way they used to play the game with a small ball and everything, were really successful in the World Baseball Classic. Now with the U.S. and the Dominican winning the last two, I don't know that I can make that argument anymore, but I think it would be a really interesting experiment, and I do think baseball is a little cyclical, so hopefully somebody will try that, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, just very quickly, I know we're here at the end, but here's my issue. I can appreciate people who want to talk about the mental side of the game. I can appreciate that. All right? But then you get into this, you've got to stick with your routine. So in other words, do you have to step out of the box every time and adjust your batting gloves? You didn't put them on right the first time?
Well, I think a lot of that, I don't think you can really step in at the major league level and ask guys to change, but what I think you can do is dictate it at the minor league level and, guys get used to it. And it's not something you can do overnight, but I think there are a lot of things you can do to start getting guys out of those habits before they ever get to the big leagues, and then you can really enforce the rules a lot more tightly than you can now.
That's a good point. That's a really good point, because I'll see that at this level here. Paul, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
That is Paul Hagan, MLB.com. Great to have him on the show again. And we'll come back with more in a moment. Brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, so Barrett Salee from CBS Sports contacted coaches, and they did a segment, Most Overrated, Most Underrated Coaches in College Football. Now, the vast majority elected a large group of the 130 active coaches in FBS. A large group chose not to answer, 48%. Here are the most underrated coaches. 24% had on their list Bill Snyder. Chris Peterson, Washington, got 15%. David Cutcliffe of Duke got 10%. Ken Niumatalolo of Navy got 10%. And 10 other coaches garnered the other 41%. Okay? Now here's the most overrated coaches. Chose not to answer 48%. Will Muschamp, South Carolina, got 4% of the vote. Tom Herman of Texas got 4% of the vote. Brian Kelly of Notre Dame got 4% of the vote. Lovie Smith of Illinois got 9% of the vote. Lane Kiffin of Florida Atlantic got 9% of the vote. Nick Saban of Alabama got 9% of the vote. And number one with 13% of the votes, from other coaches, Jim Harbaugh of Michigan. How about that? They say that for Harbaugh, here's the problem. He's never finished higher than third in his division during his seasons at Ann Arbor. He said, but sleepovers with recruits, music videos, public spats with Saban. He said he attracts a lot of attention, but is he getting the results? I'm just telling you what they wrote. Wow. I doubt Harbaugh cares. I doubt he even knows about it.